At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am pantsless, is how I want to start with this.
The whole episode, right? The whole episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, I got to start. For those of you on YouTube, I am wearing shorts. If you want to see these milky white hamstrings, just for all of you, because the great national nightmare is over. For the first time in 99 games, your Golden Gophers had a punt return touchdown. And oh, by the way, welcome to the review episode as your Minnesota team wins 59-7 over Eastern Illinois. And I don't know how to feel still, Luke. Joining us on this episode is my confidant in the press box, Gopher Gazette Zone, Dan Owen. Dan, the amount of consternation that hit the press box, both in my texts, my DMs, and even from Gopher administrators, Luke, that flew around to make sure that these pants stayed on. I love the bit, and nothing is greater than the bit, and I appreciate everybody checking on my well-being. But Dan, welcome to the breakdown episode.
Thanks. Yeah, good to join, I guess, now. Instead of being the substitute for Luke on occasion, I'm the substitute for Derek Burns. It fits, too. Both supporters of Dingytown athletes, both came up through the Eden Prairie school system. So I'd like to think we're really one and the same. He maybe just be slightly more athletic than I am. I'm not sure I could cut it as a collegiate athlete. But yeah, no, when that punt return happens in the press box, head after head just snapped over to Burns.
Just administrator after administrator, Luke. I'm telling you, because they listen, which I appreciate them.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for listening, folks. And by the way, like, this started how many years ago? Because I got annoyed with you bringing this up over and over and over. So I was like, let's make it as ridiculous as possible. The pants are going to come down, right, Ryan?
The pants stayed up. Again, the text, I probably got over 50 of you, if not more, that just immediately hit the line. Guardsy was telling me that on the Gopher Radio broadcast that Mike Grimm was talking about it. And even afterwards, Dan, you shared a moment with the head coach, which I didn't even know about until I got to witness that live. What was that about?
Well, you know, he was curious. Even PJ Fleck knew about the promised de-pantsing of one Mr. Ryan Burns, and he was interested in whether or not you had held up your end of the bargain, and I was very happy to inform him that no, you had not.
I feel bad now. I feel like
everybody's in on it, from the head coach to the associate athletic directors. It's magical. Okay. And I'll tell you, Luke, I don't think this is done, because the head coach said afterwards that he's got something for me later this week. So I think amazing. There's going to be an update when we get into the preview episode for Mississippi State. But I appreciate all of you checking on me.
Because so what I really got to figure out is, I'll email Paul and you know, the whole football communications department and be like, okay, what can Ryan take off in the press box at the next time?
We do not need to do that. Shirt? Please. I beg of you, we don't need to do that.
So this bit's done. Okay. Retired. It was a good one.
Look, everybody got to see my milky white hamstrings if you're watching
on YouTube. Yes.
But it's finally over. And not the funny part is, it took 90-something games for the streak to end. And it didn't even take 90 something minutes for them to then get the next one, where Javon Tracy doesn't strike once, but twice. Yeah. It's just when it rains, it pours. And I'll say it, boys. You guys didn't believe in the Daniel DiPrato magic. I had to put you on Daniel DiPrato, the new special teams coordinator. You didn't believe in him.
Okay.
You didn't believe.
Dan, I don't know if I don't know if you know this, but I texted Ryan this morning. One of my good friends has already renamed Javon Tracy to Jagon Tracy because he Jagon to the end zone.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I'll take that. Let's print the t-shirts right now.
T-shirts. Okay, let's talk about this 59-7 Gopher victory, where they amassed, 59 points. That probably caught all of you off guard when I said that. Not something that happens typically. But if we look at this, they were just great in all facets. They had 24 first downs to 4 for EIU. They had almost 500 total yards. And it was like every wave of player they brought in found success, Ryan, in this specific game. So probably we should start with the offense. That's seemingly where we start most of these conversations. And the thing that was apparent in your conversation with Harbaugh in the preseason, the episode that you did with him, was they wanted to find a running identity. And that became at least abundantly clear to me in this game.
Yeah, it was an interesting day for the run game, where Fleck talked about afterwards how there were moments where even he would get on the headset and say, hey, I know that there might be plus one, if not plus two in the box, but I want to prove a point to the offensive line and the tight ends here that we want to run the football with physicality. And I think that played at least a small part in some of these rushing game numbers, where on the night, Darius Taylor gets 17 first half touches, 14 carries for 56 yards and 3 scores. Like you look at that 27 yard touchdown run. That was great. Incredibly well blocked, where everybody did their job, from Pierce Walsh to Nathan Roy to Greg Johnson, absolutely moving a 290 pounder. Like he looks like you, Luke, at 190 pounds. Like they had their moments, but then they also had their moments where it wasn't clean. It wasn't crisp in the run game. Now, how much of that is PJ Fleck saying, we're just going to run the damn ball because that's what we do here in the Twin Cities and we're trying to establish something versus scheme versus whatever. But I also feel like I don't feel like getting into the weeds here too much about trying to nitpick a night in which you almost had 500 yards.
Yeah.
Like, yes, do I want to see more from the offensive line? I do. And I almost think I want to start with the right side, which we talked about in the preview, where I told everybody I believe that they were going to do shifts and platoons at right guard, right tackle. And that's exactly what we saw, where Tony Nelson started at right guard. Daniel Shipp got his first career start at right tackle. They played the first two series. And then you saw the platoon shift of Jaden Ball at right guard, Bennett Warren at right tackle. And they kind of continued. Those two played with each other. And the other two played with each other. So I don't think you're going to see that change much still come Mississippi State. I didn't think that Bennett Warren specifically at right tackle had the greatest night. I thought Daniel Shipp was the better right tackle of the two of them. But as far as the running game goes, Luke, it's again, Darius Taylor looked like Darius Taylor in moments. Did they still struggle at moments in short yardage? They did, and I want to see more knockback and physicality up front at times. But I just don't feel like the consternation is worth the squeeze here about the offense. Do you feel otherwise?
No, I think that's fair, and this is the kind of game that you want to get a lot of people reps. Taylor only gets 14 carries on the day. You know, he has the 3 touchdowns in total. They had 38 rushing attempts for 147 yards. That's only a 3.9 yard average. So not incredible, not terrible. You know, they did have the fumble. I actually did like that they went right back to Thomas right after that fumble. I thought that that was good. Thomas did end up with the best yard average at 7.4. But everybody, you know, everybody got involved. You saw some Xavier Ford, you saw some Ryan Estrada. What did you think, Dan, from the run game?
Yeah, I thought from the run game, it was acceptable. They did enough of what I wanted them to do, especially Darius Taylor getting loose on that 27 yard carry. They ran into heavy boxes most of the time, and that does mean it's going to be tougher for them to get big yardage. I'd probably have liked to see the offensive line block a little bit better in spots. I would have loved to come away from this feeling like, dang, five guys on that offensive line just kicked butt. Don't think I had that sense. Ultimately, you had the goal line stand where I think it was three carries to get across the line. Would have loved that to be one and done and you're in. Burns, you talked about the angst we saw on our board during our pre-production meeting about the state of the running game with Greg Harbaugh. I think we are a little bit more patient than some of our fans.
I can't, like, of all the nights, if we're taking a night in which you win by 50-something points, and I understand that the offense technically only put up 45. They also had an unfortunate fumble within the five-yard line. But of all the nights in which you have almost 500 yards of total offense, because the other flip side of the coin is because EIU is loading the box, Drake Lindsey also looked pretty damn good, by the way. The passing offense had, I think, 8 plays over 15 yards, which I define as an explosive. So, there's flip sides of every coin. I think the thing that you need to take away from the offense is I thought they looked pretty crisp. And I thought they looked pretty collected, which they didn't look disjointed for the most part outside of the Wildcat false start. But again, I don't want to read too much into a game in which you largely found a lot of offensive success. Like, you got into the red zone 6 times and scored 5 touchdowns. It's just yes, we want to see more from the offensive line. I think all 3 of us have now stated that for the record here. You want to see more from other guys, and we'll see what Ryan Estrada's injury ends up being. No, PJ Fleck did not talk about that afterwards, which that leads me into, Luke. This is now something I didn't know, and Dan and I are now I asked a Gopher communication staffer about this. We are not going to see an availability report until Washington now.
Oh, because they don't have to.
They don't have to. That was sure. The other change that I guess myself and other members of the Minnesota media didn't exactly look into was not only starting against Washington, they will have to do availability reports Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But the other change is they don't have to do anything now for these non-conference games. So that is where you're going to have to, I guess, stay tuned to Gopher Gazette for who I see out there dressed and not dressed in the pregame, which, wow, what a great natural transition to tell you, Luke, that it is 75% off through Labor Day at gophergazette.com. Ryan James had some men's basketball recruiting tidbits on the board this morning, including some visits being moved up, which visits being moved up is always a good thing. Dan spotted multiple women's basketball recruits at the games last night that Don Plitzowite's doing her part. Again, and we got all my different analysis on about football, so I think it'd be a great time to join us over there. I just, again, with the whole offensive thing, we want to see more in spots, yeah, but also Drake Lindsey, and that's where I want to take it, Luke, is 19 of 24 for 264 yards, that one little lob over the top to Pierce Walsh for his lone touchdown. The passing game looked pretty good, boys. I don't know. Drake Lindsey was protected, so Drake was calm, cool, and collected. Yep. But they seemed like the passing game, at least, the timing was seemingly, I thought, pretty good, Dan.
Yeah, timing was good. Drake's poise was good. Everything. He checked all the boxes that I wanted to see from him. Yep. They didn't do anything crazy or special. PJ talked about we didn't do a lot of play action this game. Another important point going back to the offensive performance. This was not the whole playbook. This is not them running at 100% efficiency or optimal play calling. It's we're going to do the simple stuff. We're going to do it well and get home with a win. But Drake executed everything. There was one point, I think he was 8 of 10 partway through the game. Mm-hmm. And the two were maybe one of them was an obvious drop by Javon Tracy. The other one, maybe a questionable ball that Noah Jennings could have made a play on along the sidelines. He didn't. But Drake was everything I wanted to see from him in this game. Luke, I don't know if you had any takeaways on that front.
I thought obviously Drake was good. He was sharp. He's what you expect, right? I think the thing that impressed me the most from the passing in general is it doesn't matter which running back you have in. Like, they don't have to change their approach in terms of getting the running backs involved in the passing game. In years past, I have felt that has been different. It felt like the passing threat was going to be Darius Taylor. That was not the case last night. So I'm curious to see that. I'm on the Noah Jennings hype train. I want to say Greg Jennings. That would be that's unfortunate.
Well, he'd have it. All I can think about is the infamous. Have you seen the Madden play from Greg Jennings? Greg Jennings, and he's got like a broken. I'm sorry, this is completely going off the rails.
No. Put the team on his back. No.
Thank you.
I'm on the Noah Jennings bandwagon. I'm also on the Hayden Moore bandwagon. Liked what I saw out of him. And then finally, Pierce Walsh, finally becoming, you know, one, getting opportunity, but then capitalizing some on that opportunity. I remember seeing him as a freshman and be like, oh, he looks the part. And then hopefully that continues to be the case. But, you know, when you spread it around to the number of receivers that Drake did, and then you're able to run the ball, you know, effectively enough to your guys' point with a loaded box, it is going to make throwing the ball easier, right? So that's where you want to be in kind of the chess match between the offense and the defense.
Well, I'd also say, I think the way that the passing game went last night, where it was four guys getting a bulk of the targets with Drake Lindsey, which was Darius Taylor, who's still going to be a very focal point of this passing game. But then Javon Tracy, Jalen Smith, and Noah Jennings. I mean, you're talking about four guys there that all had between 3 and 5 catches. And I think on a given week, we saw last night, it was the Javon Tracy night. Still think Noah Jennings with 3 for 57 or Jalen Smith for 3 for 26. I think it's going to rotate given on a given week. But that also leads me into, I think that is one of the takeaways from last night, which is they rotated a lot of guys at wide receiver and tight end. And I do think you're going to still see that happen into Mississippi State, where it was Noah Jennings, Javon Tracy, Jalen Smith. But we also saw quite a bit of Zion Steptoe, number 25. And then you saw both true freshmen in the first quarter, second quarter with Drake Lindsey before he got pulled. And Quade Hendricks, who got his face mask absolutely obliterated off there in the fourth quarter. Like, that was something to see if you stayed all the way to the end of the game. You also saw Hayden Moore tiptoe along the sidelines. I do think you're going to see all six guys still, maybe one guy less. We'll see what they end up doing. But even tight end, you saw four different tight ends mix in significantly. And none of them were named Roman Voss, which is a little bit interesting. But you had Pierce Walsh. You had the Oklahoma transfer, Caden Helms. You had Julian Johnson and Jacob Simpson. Like, everybody was getting their jitters out to an extent, which, again, a lot of those guys haven't played significant, meaningful Big Ten snaps in a consistent capacity before. But that is going to be one of my takeaways, along with the right side of the offensive line, is those rotations – I think are going to continue here as we can get deeper into September, including when an SEC team comes to town next week, where we can talk about the results, but I also want to make sure the why and the how of, okay, they played a lot of guys, but I do think that'll stick, because I think what Julian Johnson does well at tight end is different than what Caden Helms does. Or maybe if you want a little bit more speed on the field, you go with more of a Quade Hendricks type or an Noah Jennings type. It's just depending upon what Greg Harbaugh wants from this offense and who he trusts. That is an interesting part to me. I also think it was clearly TJ Thomas at running back after Darius Taylor. Like, Ryan Estrada did not mix in until well after, which kind of surprised me. Now, I will note that AJ Turner, while he did not dress last night, he did go through the entire pregame warmup, which tells me that he is closer to returning than maybe I think. Again, he started taking contact 3-4 weeks ago at this point. And with Ryan Estrada's status up in the air, I would love if AJ Turner returns here pretty soon to be another piece for the Perrin and Spare of that running back room. But rotations is something that, when you do beat an FCS team by 52 points, that is one of the things I do think you'll see as we get deeper into September.
All right, maybe we can close up here on offense. Dan, any parting thoughts that you want to get off your chest before we catch a break?
Yeah, I think one guy that we've already given him a lot of flowers, but I want to give him even more, is Javon Tracy. And Burns, you talked about this was the Javon Tracy game in terms of who was your leading wide receiver. He was incredible on punt return. It looked fantastic. But as a wide receiver, 98 yards, he looked like a legitimate weapon in open space in ways that, granted, yes, it's in Illinois, these not Big Ten caliber defensive backs that he was wriggling by and getting past, but I don't remember feeling the way I felt last night about Javon Tracy really at any point. I don't know how you guys remember his 2025 season. I remember it as being solid. This felt like I have a buddy of mine who has been in my text messages for more than a year singing the praises of Javon Tracy and saying he would be a number one for this team at some point. I saw the vision. I'm not buying stock in that yet, but I saw it when he got loose and was running around and he went for some pretty big chunk plays after breaking a tackle. When's the last time Minnesota had a wide receiver that could do stuff like that?
I mean, Daniel Jackson was really good. You can keep going back further, but I mean, Javon Tracy had the blow up game in November against Northwestern, 3 touchdowns. But that was going to be the thing for him this year is, can he do it consistently? Now, great first game, no doubt, makes plays as a punt returner, makes plays in the passing game as well, where he made multiple men miss, was almost, I mean, he was an inch away from a touchdown in the receiving game there as well. But that is going to be the thing is, can we see the playmaking consistently? Because that is still a question I have about this team going into an SEC opponent next week. What does it look like against higher caliber athletes? Do Minnesota's athletes still make plays when the quality of athlete on the other side of the field raises up?
Yeah, just to close out on Tracy, last year the things that would be shocking would be those plays where he had the drop like he had last night.
The thing I wanted to note was the first possession ends up being a punt, which we've spent a lot of time. That was my key to the game in the preview episode was they need to start fast. And Javon Tracy dropping one that hits right in the chest. I put it in the GIF rewind on Gopher Gazette. If he just catches that, like I said, hit him in the chest and turns to his left, it's going to be a tight end in space on one player. And if Javon Tracy can make a man miss, he's going to score a touchdown. Instead, it's a drop. And then on the next play, there's a missed assignment between the right tackle and the tight end you want to see him start faster, but again, consistency. So that's where he has the early drop and then he comes back to be the player of the game. Good for him.
But that end that was his problem last year, right? He would have a couple of those drops. Yep. And then he maybe wouldn't be as consistent, or it just wasn't consistent throughout when those opportunities came. You have to be able to execute, which, you know, we saw one. But and we're not asking for perfection, but you know, from then on, he was much better. The other thing that jumped out at me, and this is very much a sicko comment, is Jalen Smith catching the ball with his hands, right? Okay. If you remember last year, he was catching the ball with his body, and he was catching the ball with his hands last night. And I don't know if that's a comfort thing. I don't know if that's an Isaac Fruchty thing. Not sure. I just say like that jumped out immediately to me.
Well, yes, and I think just having more confidence going into year two is a significant contributor. But I also want to give credit to a high-calorie connoisseur who is now going to be must-watch tape every single week. Watching Greg Johnson climb to the second level with his athleticism is so fun to watch. Like, he is, for those of you who want to watch a great offensive lineman in the maroon and gold, I mean, I think Greg Johnson is going to be in store for just an outstanding season. Now, maybe I'd be a little bit biased because he was my first round selection, but I think that tape last night, when he got his hands on somebody or he was asked to get 15 yards down the field and put a safety into the ground, it's fun, man. I love watching great offensive line play. And I know Derek Burns does as well, which again, Derek will be joining us starting in conference play against Washington for those of you who are looking for him. But Greg Johnson, I think I'm excited, man. I'm excited for what another 11 games are going to look like.
That All right. Real quick, Luke, I was just going to say that game again, just going to keep putting this asterisk out there, Illinois, see if it continues. That game felt like the promise of Greg Johnson that we've been hearing for years as he's getting this NFL hype.
Right.
Where I hear it and then I see it on the field and it's a little inconsistent. It's not that is first rounder right there.
All right. Speaking of the prior like native, let's catch a quick break and then we'll get back and we'll talk defense, special teams, and what else. So speaking of Prior Lake, Ryan, we have a very good partner in the Prior Lake area. That is Launchpad Golf. If you are looking for something to do on this long weekend, and frankly speaking, it looks hot and muggy out there. If you want to go hit some golf balls, but you don't want to walk up and down, you want to play some games, you can actually go to Launchpad, hit those balls in Prior Lake there by the Meadows and by Grand Casino, and just literally have a great time. And there's a great restaurant right behind you. You can have great service as well. Monday, if you're going to go, they have special with a $10-ish burger. Check that out. I had that when we did our live event there. Great burger, great fries for around 10 bucks. Awesome deal.
Yeah. Whether you just do want to go watch a game somewhere, because that was the thing that, like I said, when we had our live event there, I had probably 5-10 people say, like, this is a great spot to just come have a drink, come have a beer, have a burger. Go watch the game somewhere. Like, yes, you can go on the other side and go into one of the bays and smoke some golf balls and try to be Bryson DeChambeau, which Luke has called himself the Roseville version of that for those of you who haven't listened to him over the last few months. But that is the best part about Launchpad, is it's very versatile. So whether you want to go hang out there, watch a game, get something to eat, or if you want to go be Tiger Woods like I attempt to do with my brand new driver and hit a slice that's bigger than a Mesa pizza slice, it is very, very versatile. So where can folks go to learn more about Launchpad?
Yeah, you can go to launchpadgolf.com, and then they have multiple locations around the country and in Canada. You can put the Minnesota at the Meadows, and then you can get information on how to get there, etc. All of their specials. It's awesome. So make sure you get down there and check it out. Also, Ryan, we do need to talk about Burns Insurance. I'm telling you, man, there is constant roof construction here in Roseville because of that storm that came in through in the June area or June timeframe. And let me tell you, I am thankful that I have insurance, but it makes me think, like, with all these changes and all this change in weather, maybe I should be looking at a new insurance policy.
Well, money's as tight as it's ever been. And I think insurance is one of the places you can save, and you want to make sure you're getting the most bang for your buck. You want to make sure you're getting taken care of. And that's where an independent insurance agent, such as the Burns Insurance Agency in Oakdale, Minnesota, can help you out. And that's where I was talking to him the other day. I go, who have you saved money to here the most? Because the best part is people listen to us, Luke, he'll tell me, like, hey, it's one of your GoPro folks called. And I go, okay, what's my most recent example, Pop? And he goes, well, Sarah in Woodbury called. Saved her $900 as she switched her home and auto over. All it takes is a free quote. So if you're located in Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, Illinois, Michigan, New York, or Utah, there is a Gopher fan in your life that wants to save you money, but also make sure you're protected from whatever life throws at you. So check them out today, insurancebyburns.com, or email him directly, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Hey, Dad, I don't know if you heard the news. We're actually partnered again for another season of Gopher football with Blue Horizon Energy. We're stoked to be able to promote what they have going, the projects they've done with the University of Minnesota, the many projects that we see as we drive, you know, from our house out to the farm again. It's just awesome to see. And I know that you've really, really valued being able to harvest and make money off of collecting the sun's energy.
Yep, I've loved my time with them. They came out and did an assessment on the farm, figured out where we could put up the solar panels. And then when I decided to do the project, They did it all. And they were really, really good to work with. They set a date when they were coming. They came. They finished the work. In fact, I have a cousin who's an electrician, and he looked over their work and said, wow, these guys are really good. So I've really enjoyed working with them. And a week or so ago, we were down at Farm Fest, and I ran into Hal from Blue Horizon Energy. And I know he's a great big Gopher fan.
Yeah, it's been a great partnership. And I don't know if you've noticed, but I know that everybody can't hardly miss that energy prices are rising. This is a way to hedge that off and control and decrease some of that cost yourself. You make an investment and it's going to pay you off in the long run. And like you said, Blue Horizon Energy is great to work with. If you want to get in touch with them, if you're a grower yourself or you're a building owner or operator, reach out to them at bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Fill out the form and they'll get in touch with you very, very shortly. Okay, let's talk about this Gopher defense. They only gave up 7 points on the night, pretty good. And frankly, probably a couple missed assignments. But the things that stick out to me, only gave up 4 first downs, 3 for 13 on third down efficiency, only 110 total yards, 51 of those are going to be on the ground and 59 through the air. You know, if you really want to get nitpicky, they didn't force a turnover. If Matt Kingsbury can learn how to squeeze the paws a little bit, probably could have had 2 and probably could have had a pick 6. But I'm telling you, man, the Gopher defense looked the part.
I'm laughing, by the way, because you mentioned Matt Kingsbury. One of my favorite moments of the rewatch was he deflected 2 passes before Eastern Illinois scored on that drive.
Yeah.
After the first deflection, they then put the camera back on him and he violently vomits everywhere for about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there on the rewatch of like, oh my God, like he got so worked up that he just starts violently going everywhere on the field and then just plays the next play. I'm just like, what a Matt Kingsbury thing to do where he's got the neck roll. Nothing's going to stop him even vomit. When you look at those 2 plays, the 2 swing passes of the running backs, I think it was a missed assignment there by Aiden Goosby on the first one, gets his eyes in the wrong spot, looked like he was in man, everybody else was in zone. And then on the second one, Matt Kingsbury just gets absolutely throttled by a tight end who's supposed to be running a pass there or just a concept, and he just trucks him, like doesn't even attempt to sell it, no flag, whatever. It's a touchdown, but it's tough for me to get upset on a night where Eastern Illinois puts up 110 total yards, is 3 of 13 on third down. And here's the other thing that you have to just remember. Did you see Eastern Illinois after like the first 10 minutes of the game even attempt to drop back pass?
No.
Like they just decided we're going to get destroyed up front, and they largely did. So before I get any more long-winded and get into my defensive line thoughts, Dan, do you have any overarching takeaways from the defensive performance?
I think the 2 you captured it pretty well. A couple little rough patches. All in all, exactly what you wanted. Dominant, shut them down, didn't allow much. Only thing I wish I had seen, I think this is going to lead right into your defensive line thoughts. I wish I had seen a couple more sacks. I know Eastern Illinois was doing some things to prevent that, but for a man who just predicted that the Gophers were going to top 41.5 sacks just days ago in an article on our site, GopherGazette.com, 75% off VIP, I would have loved to see a couple more sacks, but overall, really no complaints outside of 2 plays on 1 drive.
I mean, they played like 36 or 38 guys on defense yesterday, which that's what you should do against an FCS opponent. And I believe there were only 7 or 8 guys, Luke, that played over 25 snaps. Like trying to extrapolate a ton from that wouldn't be wise to me. Now, what I would tell you was I thought the defensive tackle rotations didn't match what I was expecting. I thought Riley Sunrum was going to get the start alongside Naquan Crowder. It was actually Theo Randall, which good for Theo Randall, gets the first start of his career after a couple of years missed with injury, 4th-year player. And then we also saw Mo Sain, the Dan Owen alumni high school in Prairie's own Mo Sain, get meaningful snaps in there. Now, Jalen Hicks was also ready to go for that game, which surprised me. I'm curious how it all shakes out yet. But we also saw Anthony Smith and TJ Bush in the NASCAR passing down package lined up as defensive tackles, which I thought was fun when you had Emmanuel Carmo and Carter Menz on the outside, which Carter Menz tied for the team lead in pressures. He had 3 pressures on 9 snaps, pass rush-wise. Seems pretty good. But I think that's the thing I'm curious to find out about more is what about this defensive tackle rotation sticks? I don't think you learn a lot of, you know, how they necessarily played, but at least on the defensive line, I thought it was interesting to see some bodies and new spots. Now, Anthony only played inside on passing downs, and that only happened, I think, 2 or 3 times. So for all that talk in the offseason yet about Anthony Smith, his versatility inside, I still believe you're only going to see that on passing down situations. But do you have any thoughts on the defensive line, Luke?
Just one. I'm glad you called out Theo Randall. Awesome to see that he actually got some run there after having battled injury for so many years. I think I've seen that man wear a boot more than I've actually seen him not wear a boot. So the fact he was able to play was awesome. Then the other thing that I was going to highlight was Anthony Smith. I feel for you, man, because you get held more than anyone gets held since Jad Joyner. Like, incredible amount of being just like
he did. I think he drew 2 holding calls yesterday.
Yeah, but just like every single play, like,
yeah,
just completely held. Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how this evolves and what the rotations look like. As you highlighted, the fact that they are doing some package stuff where they had Carter Menz, TJ Bush, and Anthony Smith, as well as Emmanuel Carmo, all there on, you know, in on passing downs. I'm curious to see what they stir up from a defensive line perspective going forward. And then let's see what it looks like with those defensive tackles. They're going to get a first test in this next game. That's something we're going to have to monitor.
Dan, any thoughts?
Eden Prairie alums will never lead you astray.
Yeah.
Never.
There you go.
Not once. That should be everyone's takeaway. If you had concerns about the defensive line, all is well. Everything is saved. Bo Sane here to play. It was a nice rotation. I walked away, though. We want to start talking a little bit about what's coming next week down the pipeline. I walked away maybe slightly more nervous than I was entering the game. And are we going to get that interior push from the defensive line?
Yeah.
Unless you're in that NASCAR type of package.
Yeah.
When they have to go up against SEC big bodies,
mm-hmm.
I need to see more from them next week. I guess I can't draw judgment on EIU game, but I didn't quite get what I was hoping. I was hoping to see somebody get a little bit more disruptive than what we saw.
Yeah. And to that point, the interior pressure piece is a good point, Dan, because we had some concern about mobile quarterbacks. I walked out of that game being like, okay, this didn't make me feel significantly better about that. It didn't make me feel like significantly worse either, but it didn't squash that feeling. And we know, you know, Mississippi State's going to come to town, probably the most mobile quarterback coming to town here shortly. So that's going to be the real test. And it's something they're going to see consistently throughout this season.
Yeah, we'll find out more next week. But I do think as we go back to linebacker, one of the things that I think from fall camp that did translate over is Matt Kingsbury has a significantly bigger role and Emmanuel Carmo does not. Where you look at the snaps, it was almost 3-1 for Kingsbury alongside Matt Kingsbury out there. And even for Carmo was out there late into the fourth quarter with the Rofers. So when we talked about all offseason, who's going to be that guy to replace Devin Williams, Matt Kingsbury seems to be the guy that Minnesota trusts the most, whether that's Danny Collins or Mariano Sori-Marin. Then you've also got the fifth year out of Woodbury, which shout out to the East Metro, because, again, that's the better side of the river for anybody who needed me to be explicitly clear about that. The better side of the river. Gerlach also had a bigger role than Carmo did. I guess that surprised me to an extent because Carmo's role, at least last night in a meaningful way, was just in a passing down capacity, which, yeah, I mean, that's where I would use him, which doesn't exactly quell the, is Emmanuel Carmo a linebacker, or is he eventually just going to be a pass rusher on the defensive line here down the line? But Kingsbury getting the amount of snaps and meaningful snaps that he did is something that I'm going to be keeping an eye on here as we continue to move forward.
It's going to be interesting with Emmanuel Carmo. I mean, to your point, is he a linebacker? Is he a pass rusher? Does he end up following the Carter Coughlin script, like career path, where Coughlin was initially effective as an edge rusher because that was straightforward and easy for him to do? And then we saw the Gophers try the linebacker thing a little bit with him, and it just never really caught on. Ultimately, he was really successful as an edge for the Gophers, but it was he never quite did that linebacker thing. Interesting to me, though, he did end up as more of a linebacker once he got to the NFL. But I can't help but wonder, is that the model for where Emmanuel Carmo is going to end up going?
Yeah,
that's a good point.
It is. I mean, it's something that as you continue to watch this defense, as Danny Collins learns more about Emmanuel Carmo, Matt Kingsbury, Joey Gerlach, we saw Mason Carrier make some plays in there too. He was mixing in a meaningful capacity too with those other three. But it's one of the things where I don't want to rotate a ton of guys, but you also have to find out what you have to an extent. Now, on the back end too, I mean, we knew that Minnesota wanted to rotate guys. I'm pretty sure, according to PFF, Mekhi Smith, Garrison Monroe, Aiden Goosby all played between 14 and 18 snaps, which is just a chef's kiss to how Danny Collins just wants to keep everybody on their toes. Zach Harden played quite a bit. I mean, we didn't see the corners really tested at all because EIU just refused to do drop back passing because they couldn't pass protect. But you know what I did take away from that defense yesterday was they played fast, and boy, did they play physical on all three levels. Like, they didn't play a step slow for most of the game. And whether it was Aiden West coming up to deliver a boom, whether it was Matt Kingsbury hitting somebody at the line of scrimmage, whether it was my guy, Mr. Grit, Mr. Danny Amendola, Wes Welker, TJ Bush himself, which is just all heart determination and perseverance. I thought they played very physical, which that is something I like to see. That's what you need to see from a team that is going to be a good Big Ten defense. So I don't want to get too deep into the weeds with how much of it, but I guess that would be probably my final takeaway was physicality seemed apparent throughout 60 minutes. And so did them playing fast largely, which we're going to see if that translates to next week.
Yeah. And then Kerry Brown is just absolutely everywhere. Like, I thought the television broadcast did a good job of highlighting how he's going to do a lot of the stuff that doesn't show up. And, you know, we talk often about how safety can be a very boring position, but he seemed to be playing that role well. And I imagine he's going to pop as the season goes on. I forget. I think Daniel ended up with him, and I think in the draft, and I think Daniel's going to be very happy with that selection. I think Kerry's going to have an awesome year.
Do we finally get to breaking down the all-22 of the Javon Tracy touchdown, which I showed Dan and I've also sent it to Luke. They owe a gift basket to the EIU coverage team because they had zero idea where that football was, because the irony of Minnesota's return touchdown coming in a situation where the defense is on the field and punt safe, and there's just seven guys down the field unblocked, but none of them see that the ball is between the hash and the Minnesota sideline, and they're all in the middle of the field. I'm going to take it. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to take it, because all it took was then for them to do their best Charles Barkley impressions and just box guys out so they don't get, you know, some block in the back flags. Or even Anthony Smith on the poor Eastern Illinois punter, which, do you think he saw God in his eyes when 6'6", 280 pounds is blocking him, and he's just looking up for help to the skies? Javon Tracy makes one man miss, gets to just run along the sidelines. And then even on the second one, which was much more well blocked, I mean, I think Garrison Monroe made a smart business decision to not hit him with a block in the back. He throttled back. You had guys like Ethan Stendel, or even, you know what I did enjoy seeing, by the way, was there's essentially only one offensive player who is a core special teamer that I saw last night, and that is Nukes.
Yeah, I noticed that too. A guy
that is older in the program, doesn't have a role on the offense, and you know what? Okay, guess what? I want to play. Okay, we'll find a spot for you on special teams. And he made a key block as Javon Tracy was able to then scamper outside. Like, those are still the things where you can be romantic about college sports still with that. You can feel something on the inside where a guy's like, okay, I know that my role in offense isn't there, but I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to pout. Put me on special teams. I'll play. I'll bust my tail. I mean, those are the types of things where it's like, heck yeah, man. Heck yeah.
I thought it was interesting in PJ's post-game press conference, and I think we even have a clip of this on our site, he talked about how good of a hire Daniel DePrado was, but he really emphasized how much like buy-in he seems to be inspiring throughout the room. And as you ticked through guys making smart choices and going for it on blocks, that showed through. I thought PJ kind of, I mean, surprisingly, he knows his football team, but kind of hit the nail on the head there, where that was a different level of effort than I think we've seen, effort and execution, than we've seen in special teams from the Gophers units before.
Yeah, it's interesting how it seems like you make one change at the coaching position and it's drastically different, right? I never really believed that would be the case. And Ryan and I argued about special teams for years and years and years.
Did we? News to me.
Yeah. And I might have made a meme about it that didn't go over particularly well. I'll just say that this is very different now. Let's see if it holds, because that was a terrible effort by EIU. I will be very curious to see how they continue, but I am very much optimistic at this juncture. We should talk though about the kicking game as well.
That's where I wanted to go. It's not even necessarily about who kicked last night. It's more so about who didn't kick. Where Minnesota made the decision, and they kept it very hush hush, where it didn't even reach my ears, that the New Mexico transfer Luke Drzewicki did not participate last night, even though he is technically, as we sit here in time, eligible to play. Now, why did Minnesota elect to do that? I've spent some time asking some people behind the scenes about it, and I think there was some worry that if a NCAA ruling from somewhere comes down and rules all of these guys ineligible, the guys that have participated in NFL minicamp at the very least, ineligible. Well, if you take last night's game for an example, Minnesota only kicked one field goal, but they kicked extra points. Well, Minnesota's worry was, would we then have to forfeit the game because we technically used an ineligible player? So that's where he didn't even warm up before the game. I know Andy Greeter from the Pioneer Press, who does great work, saw him on the sidelines dressed. I didn't. I never saw him at any point, never saw Brady Denneberg at any point. And I think from what has been relayed to me is Minnesota expects to know much more about Drzewicki's eligibility status for the long term before the Mississippi State game, which would be very good news. So that was the situation that unfolded last night. Was Minnesota went risk averse, said we're not going to need a kicker necessarily to beat EIU, and they didn't. But that's where it opened the gates there to see a little bit more Beckham Sunderland as your kickoff guy. And then you also got to see Alexandria, Mr. Rollercoaster himself from Football Across Minnesota, Daniel Jackson, be the kicker. And he made his lone attempt. It's just snuck inside the left upright there. So I don't know that we necessarily learned a ton, because Minnesota didn't attempt any field goals outside of the 31-yarder, which – Luke, if you want to have me get on the brand here, I tweeted it, and I also said it to Dan in the press box before halftime. I was hoping that Minnesota kind of just played for a 40-something yard field goal, because in a game where you're going to win by 6 trillion, I would love to see if Daniel Jackson's accuracy when he's got 40, 45,000, 50,000 eyeballs on him, Like, I, that's something I would have loved to take away, but I also understand that I'm getting very, very, how do I want to phrase that? I mean, we're really getting nitpicky at that point.
I did listen to your guys' live reaction thing on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Great work. Ryan, what are you doing wanting them to kick a field goal when they go in and score a touchdown? That had to be the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Let me live. All right.
you and special teams have this like very uncomfortable and unhealthy relationship where you have these weird expectations. Let's score 7 points instead of three.
Well, again, I just want to to defend myself here. What does it matter if it's 56-7 instead of 59-7, other than at the end of the season, it looks better. Like, you know what I'm saying? I would rather in that instance, learn something that we can hopefully tangibly take forward into a much more meaningful game. That is the only premise behind it. Is it stupid? Probably. There's probably folks yelling at their TV or car or whatever saying, Ryan, you're a bigger moron than usual, which, yeah, tell me something I don't know. But that is the thought process. There's like, they sucked at 40-yard field goals last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see what the new guys got, whether it is Jackson, Sunderland, or Drzewicki.
I guess my point would be, we've asked PJ to be more aggressive. Stay more aggressive. Thank you, PJ. Don't listen to Ryan's inner, I want to see if we got a guy that could kick a 40-yard field goal.
Hey.
We'll get there when we get there.
Bernsey, we don't know how the second half is going to play out here. Okay? I have lived and died by the difference between 3 points and 7 points. And there are millions of people all around the country, and especially out in the deserts of Las Vegas, who are with me. Shut your mouth. Let's get the points.
Thank you, Dan. Finally. Some support here. Usually Derek's just like, okay. Okay. So good stuff on special teams. Beckett Sunderland, he can kick it. And let me tell you, he has better tats than you, Ryan.
he's double sleeved up, my man.
Double sleeved. Yep. You got some work to do to catch up. All right. Final thoughts. Do we want to talk some of the coaching stuff? I mean, there's not a lot to talk here.
Well, I actually did want to mention something with special teams. They called four timeouts around the punt game. And
Minnesota did?
Yeah. That was one of the things where I was like, what in the world is going on? Like, I understand that I'm not going to get Daniel House on you with some punt formation changes, and maybe they didn't like what they saw, but they used four timeouts last night prior to either them punting or them getting like a punt return. Four timeouts. Now, in a game that doesn't matter like that, where the game's out of hand, whatever, but that was insane to see.
Always coaching.
Like, you cannot be burning timeouts left and right like that next week, because if you are, shame on you. Yeah. But that was just like such a strange anomaly to see.
And that was something that I wanted to ask PJ about. And then that dude in the corner of the media room dropped his camera equipment or whatever, and I just got distracted. It scared me.
You mean the guy Fleck wanted to...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Fleck was about to fire him on the spot. Didn't know his name, didn't know who he was, but that guy... couldn't stop making enough noise, that's here or there.
His namelessness may have been the thing that saved his job. But I'd wanted to ask Fleck about that. We're going to get Fleck again on Monday here, and it's on my list to make sure somebody asks it. Because, it was weird. And there has to have been a reason, right?
Surely.
Absolutely.
It had to have been some type of formational thing. I don't know what it was about. Maybe they had 10 guys. I think I saw a couple times on the rewatch, maybe they only had 10 guys on the field, which that can't happen. But because you had the two explosives, that gets in the wash. But you have four timeouts was insane. I don't know. Like, again, as we get into final thoughts before we talk about the fighting Joe Harris Simiaks and then their revenge game narrative out there at Rutgers, I do think I am very excited to see what this team does and how they respond to something like this against Mississippi State next week. You've got an SEC team coming into town for the first time since all of us were alive. And now they're a team that isn't projected to be a contender in the SEC. But guess what? They have SEC athletes, And it's going to be a lot more difficult to just run by a guy or just move a guy against his will when they all look like you. So then it's going to become, can you stop Kamario Taylor, who's the mobile quarterback for the Bulldogs? How do you move the football against that defense, which is very havoc creating, very 3-3-5? Like, I am excited to see, especially on a nationally televised spot, 2:30 on CBS. And it sounds like ticket sales are going really well for that game. It should be a great atmosphere as well. Like, I'm excited to see what this team does and if they can respond against a much better opponent next week.
Yeah, it will be really fun to see this. It's always fun to have, you know, bigger brands come, you know, visit. I was going to say TCF Bank Stadium, but Huntington Bank Stadium and just the Twin Cities in general. And they get to experience the Twin Cities. I think most people leave going, that place is awesome.
Yeah.
Very rarely do you find people that don't like the Twin Cities. So I think they'll have a great weekend to do it. And I'm excited to see the competition. Ryan and Dan, number one, your live stream was great. What should people expect going forward? You did it before the press conference this time. Are you going to continue to do it before the press conference or after?
I think the plan would be to do it before, because Fleck takes forever. Like, he takes 45 to an hour after a game, which sometimes he's a little quicker than that. But the plan is to just get on there and give initial thoughts for 15, 20 minutes. Then we can get more long-winded in something like this. But for the home games coming up here, Mississippi State and Akron, that would be the plan. It's going to get a little bit more tricky when I go out to Washington. Because especially if that's a night game, I mean, are you and Dan going to be doing some live streams at 1 a.m. Central? Because I got to mosey my way down from the press box to try to find where. Yeah, like that. It gets a little bit more difficult on the road. We're still figuring out the nuances of that. Still trying to figure out if we want to do two cameras or one. I appreciate everybody.
I thought it was good. The one was good. The mics were great. Like, I thought that was good. And if people don't know, this is going to be on YouTube on the Gopher Gazette channel. So you'll be able to listen to them there. I love the instant reaction. Just thinking of my experience, like, part of the reason we started the podcast was I liked long form conversations. There weren't any for Gopher football. And so we did this, right? And then the other thing that I also, like, I'm glad you guys are doing this, is like, I want instant feedback right away. And yeah, you kind of get that from like the radio, but that is so scripted. Like, I want the off the cuff conversation, what comes up naturally through conversation. And I think you guys did a great job. So make sure if you're listening to this, and we know lots of you do, make sure you check that out next time, because you might be the one that wants to watch it then. But if you can't watch it live, you can go home and it's recorded. It's there. You can check it out.
And thankfully, Dan can be on the back end cleaning up some of my language that was dropped in there that he's now since cleaned up. Because I like to use the occasional, I'll say, cuss word here too in my everyday vernacular. But forgot that we were still live, and had somebody reach out to me and be like, "Hey, so you know, drop that one in there." I was like, "Oh, all right, Dan, we'll go clean that up." So
yeah, I mean,
that to look forward to.
If we need any kind of advertisement for why you should tune in now, it's get in on the train before we figure out all of our little production issues, and you might catch Burns swearing at me.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Which, how much swearing do you think, who swore more, Greg Schiano at his coaching staff last night, or the Rutgers fans at UMass? The Fighting Joe Harris Simiaks go into Piscataway as an 0-12 team last year, and they absolutely dog walk his former employer in the Greg Schiano, Kirk Sciarca. Like, you can't draw it up any better for UMass and Harris Simiak. But Luke,
can I read a text exchange with my?
I hope you do.
One colleague that my old colleague that is a big Rutgers fan, probably a booster, you could say. And I just sent him a message after the game that said, "Harris Simiak, might be the top candidate on the hot board. No response. Numerous hours. Valid. He responds, "You are mean." That's it. You are mean.
He's hurt. He's vulnerable, and you're kicking him when he's down. What kind of friend are you?
And then, this morning, I think it was this morning. Yeah. I got my season is already over. Greg Schiano needs to go. That really made me more sad than I thought possible.
Well, and they capped it off with the world's most pathetic fireworks.
Oh
showcase.
My God.
It always breaks my heart when things like that happen, where you're like, surely if you're Rutgers, this is going to be a rough season. I think we knew that coming into the year.
Yeah.
So if you're Rutgers administration, you're like, all right, we want to do a fun fireworks extravaganza for our fan base. What's a safe spot on the schedule to put that? Surely the UMass game, the team that hasn't won, beaten a Power Four team in multiple seasons. Wait, was it Power Four? Or was it FBS?
I think it's FBS. And oh, by the way, they're coming off a season in which, in Joe Harris Simiak's first year, they went 0-12 and were largely not competitive at any point. It's just, Luke, you underestimated how much they were going to miss the Greek rifle. That is what I take away, is you doubted.
Yeah, well, I will say, Ethan now puts, what's this now, two quarterbacks in the league for the Gophers, the outside of Drake that has started a game, making 53-man rosters. Now, I guess Brosmer didn't, he made it and then didn't make it. But yeah, man, like Rutgers is in a weird spot because they are really in the red.
520 million in the red over since they've joined the Big Ten, in case you were wondering.
And what's your solution here is to probably try and move on. Well, that brings you more in the red. And I don't know, man, it's a dangerous game that you're playing. We see what UCLA did this last week too. I don't necessarily envy either of those programs in the situations that they're in, but man alive, that's a tough one. But in the same respect, like, we had our own Bowling Green, right? So I just don't think it's as bad as UMass.
Yeah, no, the Bowling Green game, you could easily chalk up to a overly tight and passive kind of approach. Just keep very vanilla. They got the snot kicked out of them.
Yeah, and that's the worst of PJ that you can get, right? The overly tight, overly analyzing, overthinking, not playing free. You know, not taking chances, not taking risk. But yeah, you're right. You're right, Dan. You nailed that.
And when in talking about the budget, Daniel House and I were commiserating up in the press box before the game, watching the Rutgers team just fall apart in the first half. Ugh. And he looked it up. And I think it was Greg Schiano's buyout is something like $23.4 million. That's a buyout that is scaring away programs far wealthier than Rutgers. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They're in a rock and a hard place. They're going to lose more money if this is what their football product looks like, and they don't have the money to get themselves out of it right now.
Well, and the crazy part is they paid $1.5 million to get beat, right? Like
$1.55 to you.
Okay, sorry.
That was the guarantee for UMass to come down to Piscataway. Oh, yeah, it's golly.
Okay, let's just close out. A game you're excited for this weekend. That still, you know, since we are a Thursday game, there's still games obviously coming up. Each of you pick one, and I'll pick one.
Dan, go first.
I'm going to take my favorite one on the slate across the board. It's a little bit under the radar in terms of national prominence, but I'm going UCLA at Cal.
Mm-hmm.
I knew, as soon as you, when you said go first, I was like, I'm going to take Burns because I know that's the one you're going to go with.
Chesney versus JKS, Pac-12 after dark, tomfoolery, skullduggery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's absolutely.
It should be fun. I think it's going to be competitive. The Gophers know who JKS is. Jaron Keawe Sagapotele.
Keawe Sagapotele to you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We experienced what that late night Cal game environment can do to a team. I am very curious to see what UCLA looks like. I love Bob Chesney. I do not think in one of the Bob Chesney era they pull this one out, because Cal has a quarterback. And it's going to be, I'm very interested to see how that goes.
All right, Burns, what do you got? You can't pick the same one. So
I'm going to go the Lambeau Sunday night game on NBC, which is Notre Dame versus Wisconsin. I've spent far too much time on a Gopher podcast talking about how I'm fascinated by Wisconsin this year. And that starts in week one, where is Notre Dame going to come out and look like the college football playoff contender that I think they are this year? And that pains me to say, is I can't stand Notre Dame as an institution, but like, I think they have a chance to be pretty good. Whereas I am very leery about Wisconsin being a team that takes the next step. So we're all going to get to watch it because there's no NFL this week. It's Sunday night on NBC. There's going to be millions of eyes to see what the Badgers look like, and mine will be two of them.
All right, I'll close this out. Probably no surprise to any of you. I am most excited for the Apple Cup. Very odd to have it as the first game of the year. I will say that much. But I'm ready to see the Huskies take out the Cougars. Should be a fun one. And I will say there's an ounce of like a little bit of concern as to how things are going to look with the whole saga of will he or won't he? And he is, because the Big Ten says so.
You're talking about Damon Williams, who is the quarterback who tried to leave to go to LSU to take a bag. The Big Ten said, screw you, you're not getting out of this contract you signed. And he stayed. So how does that look as he now tries to go back to a locker room that is obviously aware that he said, I'm leaving, take the bag, see ya. Yeah. So we'll see how it all looks. I'm all for it.
Luke, I am curious, as a diehard Washington Huskies fan.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm not a diehard like I am a Gopher fan. And as I've had kids, I haven't been as diehard as I've been. But yes, as the son of a mom who played in the marching band when Warren Moon was the quarterback, going to Rose Bowls, yes, I am a Husky fan.
So,
but
ask what has. Now that Washington State is effectively a second-tier team, they're no longer a conference rival of the Huskies, and University of Washington is clearly a step above where the Cougars are now. Has the Apple Cup lost its shine for you at all, or is this still – you still view this as a big-time rival?
I think I still view it as a big-time rivalry, mostly in part because, like, I have gone to a few Apple Cup games and just experienced it. And until I probably go and experience it where you don't feel the animosity or the tension, like I'm going to feel that it's the same. Now the games, like to your point, haven't been particularly close of late. And some of that was because Washington was incredible and went to a national championship. But yeah, since Washington State basically got left for dead, that part is disappointing. But man, some of those Mike Leach years, man, oh, some of those games were awesome.
Yeah. It's good it's of interest, I think, to Gopher fans, because when Minnesota inevitably gets the invite to the Super League and leaves Wisconsin and Iowa in our dust, it's nice to know
TV market. Yeah.
That we'll still be able to care about matchups with our less than rivals.
Dan,
I love that for you.
All right, good stuff. That's a good place to end. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank our sponsors again, Launchpad Golf, Blue Horizon Energy, and the Burns Insurance Agency. We are excited to have football to talk about, meaningful games. I don't think anybody can question that. And I'm excited for Mississippi State. Looking forward to previewing it and watching the game. So again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.
Voloshin from TechStuff. Your digital footprint is probably bigger than you think. A simple search can pull up your personal details, where you live, how to contact you, even past information, all from data broker websites. OneRep helps you take that back. They scan more than 878 data broker and people search sites, automatically remove your personal information, and continuously monitor for new exposures so it stays off. It's a privacy protection that keeps working in the background. Visit onerep.com and use code TECHSTUFF to get up to 60% off any annual plan.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No